Hey there, Rick Singeri of Vermont Edition. Just want you to know this podcast has been edited for brevity. Thanks for listening.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. On the scalp inside the hairline, underneath a breast, in the crease of the back of a knee, in the fold of an ear, on a love handle, tucked up in an armpit, inside the intergluteal cleft, more colloquially known as the butt crack. Those are just a few of the places I or people I know have reported spotting and removing ticks on ourselves or people we love this year so far. Anecdotally, tick populations are up all over our region, and tick researchers confirm there are a lot of ticks this year. So while we seem to have this conversation pretty frequently these days, it seems appropriate to have another tick show here on Vermont Edition. What exactly are ticks? Where are they found? And what can you do to prevent getting sick from a tick bite? Now, joining us for this conversation is Bill Landesman, now a biology professor at the University of Bridgeport in Connecticut. He was at Green Mountain College until it recently closed, and he's still testing ticks in Vermont. Bill, it's nice to talk with you again.
Hi, Jane. Thanks for having me on.
And David Allen is a biology professor at Middlebury College, and he also researches ticks. David, it's a pleasure to have you on the show.
Great to be here.
So, Bill, before we get started, I understand you have a task for all of us, listeners and hosts included, and guests, presumably.
Yes. I'm very concerned that some of your listeners out there right now might have a tick on them, either crawling around or biting. So I'd like to ask everyone to do a little exercise, if you can stop what you're doing for a moment, and check your arms, your legs, the shoulder area, all those lovely regions that you so eloquently described at the start. I was cracking up. No, but seriously, you're looking for, it's very possible that someone has a tick on them right now, and it'd be great to see if we could just stop one tick bite today. You're looking for a small black dot. I hope, and if there's someone with you who can check the hard to see places, that would be great. And
like the intergluteal cleft?
Yes. And other very unpleasant areas, because that's really where you have to check those areas.
Yeah. So here's sort of a test or something that we can do, not quite for fun, but if you do a tick check, which I hope you will, because Bill has requested all of us to do a tick check right now. And if you find a tick, call us. I want to know, does anybody actually find a tick? And Bill, actually twice this year, I've been here at VPR in the studio and felt a bite one time and looked down and there was a tick biting me. So twice just at the office, both after mornings being outside when I hadn't done a tick check yet. But yeah, I mean, it is not unusual this year to hear people talking about how many ticks they've removed.
And I think that's the key. If you feel an itch, don't ignore it. You're lucky to get that. It happens to me too. And take a look at that. If there's something that's itching you, it could be a tick.
Do some people not feel tick bites and others do? Because I've heard that that can be the case.
It's definitely. Of course, we all hear stories about how people have a fully engorged tick and didn't even realize it. That would be the case.
David Allen, are you doing a tick check there in the Middlebury College studio?
Yeah, you know, I haven't been outside yet today, I do. Whenever I am outside, I do a really good tick check right when I come back out or when the next time I shower.
And do you always notice, I mean, can you, because when we're talking about nymphs, they are really small. I mean, can you, when you're doing your own tick checks, Professor Allen, do you feel the tick on your skin? Can you even feel the nymph? So even if you can't see the back of your knee, that sort of crease in the back of your knee, you might feel a little bump?
Yeah, these ticks are quite small. They're described as the size of a poppy seed. And so I think lots of folks are familiar with the adult stage, but then maybe haven't seen the nymphal stage. And so it's, yeah, like Bill said, you know, maybe check out a picture online and see this very small poppy seed sized tick. Often I can't feel them when they're embedded. I feel them better because it sort of feels like a little flap. The head is embedded in you. And then as you rub your hand against it, the tick sort of flaps back and forth. But when it's crawling, they're very easy to miss.
David, this is like the most horrific sentence that has ever been stated on Vermont Edition. I'm cringing just hearing
so
you
sorry.
Talk about like the little flap of the embedded tick flapping back and forth on your skin. It's like a horror movie in audio form. Ugh. So, you know, you say like, oh, when they're embedded, I can feel them better. Now, for a lot of people, it strikes fear into their hearts as soon as they feel a tick, whether or not they know they've had it in the last couple of hours or not. I mean, David, it sounds like you're pretty familiar with this. You get bitten a lot in your line of work?
No, I don't get bitten a lot. I maybe once or twice a summer. And I, like Bill, I'm increasingly, you know, feel it and it itches. And I think that there's some evidence that the more tick bites you get, you develop an immune reaction, and that's what you're feeling with the itch. So maybe that's a blessing in that once you get a couple, then you start to feel it more. But I mean, I try to practice good prevention methods and only get one or two a summer.
So Bill Landisman, David Allen just told us a little bit about what we should be looking for, a little thing the size of a poppy seed, and if you're looking for a nymph. Can you describe what people should be on the lookout for?
In what respect?
In terms of trying to find ticks on themselves.
Well, it's like a small black dot. When they're crawling around, you're not going to feel it. Your only chance, I would guess, is if it's embedded, and you may or may not feel it. But you're looking for a black dot. You might mistake it for a freckle, so it's good to become familiar with your freckle pattern on your on your skin. Sometimes it's not clear. I mean, just the other day, I happen to have had a lot of tick bites this year. I think maybe I'm getting a little sloppy with my tick checks. And just the other day, my wife and I, Kristen, we were looking at this dot on my arm. I couldn't quite see it myself, but and Kristen was taking a look, and we thought it was, I was sure it was a tick, and it wasn't. So sometimes it's hard. And the other thing to keep in mind is that you might get a tick even if you haven't been outside. I've been getting tick bites 2 days after my last field visit. I got my first tick bite before I even started sampling. I was in my backyard in the shrubs, and even then it was a day or two later that I found it. People can bring them into your home. Pets can bring them into your car. So it's not just when you're outdoors. I think if you're in Vermont, I would say treat it like brushing your teeth. Try to do it twice a day if you can.
We're getting comments and notes from listeners, and then I'll come back to you, David. Ellen in Norwich says, my husband and I got 43 ticks on us from a mile and a half walk on a trail through the woods 10 days ago. Last year, we might have seen 4 or 5. Sean in Brattleboro says, lint rollers are a must in the car, backpack, everywhere. Kathy in Randolph writes, I noticed a speck on a shirt I was hanging on the clothesline this morning. It was a black-legged tick still ticking after going through the washing machine cycle. You've got to admire their hardiness and persistence. I have a small Ziploc bag full of ticks in alcohol from the past few weeks. Some found on clothes, some found on us, some on the wall. Christopher emailed in to say, I've gone to putting dog, flea, and tick collars around my ankles. I'm not sure if that's recommended protocol, but lots of people seeing a lot more ticks. David Allen, you know, is there a way to actually calculate how many more ticks there are this year, or is this just all anecdotal that sort of adds up to something?
No, there's two or three ways of sampling for ticks. One of them is to trap for small mammals, which is the preferred host of these ticks, and then count the number of ticks that are on mice or chipmunks. And then an even easier way is to drag a white drag cloth along the ground, and this is called drag cloth sampling. It's a standard method that biologists use to quantify the number of ticks in an area. So it's a meter by meter square white piece of denim, and you drag it along the ground and check it at regular intervals, and then count the number of ticks that have attached to it. So these are ticks that are actively what we call questing. They're searching for a host, and they will respond to any movement, brushing by, and grab onto your drag cloth. And so we've been doing that for the last 4 years. Bill has been doing it for even longer, and this is the year that we've, at least so far in the summer, found the most number of ticks.
And Bill Landisman, same thing for you. You're finding the most as well this year?
It's probably a tie with 2015. 2015 might have been a little bit higher. I started in 2014, and so like I said, 2015 was a very high year. Now, interestingly enough, last year was the lowest year that we had. And so just to give you a sense, and this year would be close to the highest. And to give you a sense of the difference, at my lowest tick site last year, at the peak of the season, I found no ticks. At the peak of the season this year, I found 8. At my highest tick site last year, I found 42. And this year, I found 102.
Wow.
And this is all of this is in the 4 lines, each 100 meters long. So it's 400 square meters of sampling. So the same amount of sampling effort. So definitely things are much higher this year in comparison to last year.
Wow. That's pretty intense.
I would say that even though this is a high year, last year was a very low year, it's both years are very bad. So even when you find, quote unquote, only 42 ticks, that's a lot of ticks, or 10 ticks is a lot. So I think that for me, the take-home message of the past 6 years of sampling is that the situation isn't changing. It's not getting better. It's not getting worse. It's bad. And there are some changes from year to year that are interesting to study. They change the risk. But unfortunately, we're at high risk each of the past 6 years and even longer.
I want to ask you both a little bit about why in a moment, but let's just get some more listeners in here, because clearly this is, you know, something that so many of us are seeing, and we're hearing about it all the time this year. And as both of you have noted, it is a really high tick year, but it's a high tick year in an increasingly high tick area. And certainly, you know, there are some reasons for that I want to get into. But let's go to Jim, who's calling in from West Burke. Hi, Jim. Go right ahead.
Oh, thank you. I know a lot about ticks. I lived on Long Island, amongst the reeds, and we had a lot of them there. Somebody gave me this tip to get them off of you. You put a little drop of tamphophenique on the tip, on the tick when he's embedded in you, and you watch his legs start going around. He'll get a little bit drunk. It'll be a lot easier to pull out. Now, you might also be able to use strong alcohol and get him drunk. There's no harm in it. You're only disinfecting yourself. And you're going to make it a lot easier to pull the tick out.
Jim, thanks for that. Bill Landisman and David Allen, is getting the tick drunk, or at least putting some alcohol on your skin before removing the tick, a good way to do it? David Allen, I'll start with you.
I think you want to be careful with some of these methods, like burning it or putting Vaseline over it, or even getting it drunk, where when you disrupt the tick, it can be more likely to add more saliva to you, and that's how you're getting these tick-borne pathogens. So the tick is feeding by sucking your blood, and then adding saliva, emitting saliva into you to decrease your blood clotting and to decrease your immune response. And that's when it's passing these tick-borne pathogens to you. So the CDC suggests that you just try to pull the tick out with nice, slow, even pressure with blunt forceps so you don't disrupt the tick and encourage it to increase disease transmission.
And ideally, you want to be picking it out from its head if you can and not sort of squeezing its body back into
definitely.
Your skin, right?
So getting those forceps or tweezers as close to the neck or the head of the tick as possible, so when you pull out, you know, break the tick and leave the head inside you, which again can increase disease transmission.
Walter is calling in from Walpole, New Hampshire. Hi, Walter. Go right ahead.
Hi, Jane. Thank you for taking my call.
Yeah. What have you got for us today?
Well, I spent 4 hours in the ER on Saturday night taking off a tick.
I'm sorry to hear that.
Well, so am I, but this year has been terrible. I've already, they're in the house, they're all over the place. You can't help it. I live rural, and of course, we used to roll in the grass, but you can't do that anymore. And I got about 8 of them in a jar in alcohol that I, you know, real deer ticks. And what I found, what I had on my back, and I didn't know it, but I had it for 2 days while I was cutting grass. And it was a wood tick. But they're just as poisonous as a deer tick. And I have a good remedy for you.
Okay.
Take your clothing when you come in, throw it in a dryer for 15 minutes. Do that every day when you come in from outside.
Walter, thanks for that, and I'm sorry to hear about your trip to the emergency room. I hope it's all resolved quickly. And, you know, we do hear a lot about take your clothes off after you've gone for a walk, put them in the washer and dryer especially. We do hear about, you know, take a shower right after you've come in from the outside. And certainly in my family, we're doing a lot of both of those things, more so this year than in previous years. Earl is calling in from Barrie. Earl, how about you? More ticks this year?
Hi, Jane. I keep a list every year and done it now for 7 years. I got 7 years worth of data, and I call it TikTok, which would be a great name for your program today. This year, I found the first tick was actually the earliest we had was my son got a tick on April 21st, which was Easter, and that's the earliest we've ever seen a tick. In April, we had 32 ticks. In May, we had 77 ticks. And then June so far about 30 ticks. So it's higher than most of my totals. I do agree with your guests here that 2015, 2016 there's sort of a high in there. But they're nasty little critters. So your earlier guest about I'm not sure I'd give good whiskey to a bad tick. So.
Earl, thanks for that, and boy, yeah, thanks for the show title as well. We're going to rename this one TikTok for today. Another call here from Joyce in Hubbardton. Hi, Joyce.
I have kind of an odd situation. We have our 11-year-old grandson and a friend coming up for 5 days, and we're on the Lake Hortonium. They're going to be hiking and out and about. And he's extremely modest. And I talked to my daughter about tick checks in private places, and she said, no way. There's no way he'd be so humiliated. So she said, we'll just watch and make sure if he shows any signs of Lyme disease, we'll get him treated, but we'll just do the tick checks in the non-private parts. So it's just a comment about dealing with it in that situation. I don't know if anybody has any bright ideas for what to do, but don't want him being totally embarrassed, and his friend too, having us checking them over. So,
yeah, Joyce, I hear what you're saying, and certainly, you know, modesty is an issue for most of us, if not all of us. And with a kid, you know, who you're trying to keep track of, but also allow them to have their own bodily autonomy and privacy, I can hear how difficult that would be. Bill Landisman, do you have tips? I mean, people live alone too. Obviously, you know, we can check ourselves. So, you know, what would you advise for Joyce and her family?
Well, one of the earlier recommendations from an earlier caller of using the dryer is a great idea when you come in from the outdoors to put all your clothing. Okay, if you're going on a hike, not every single time you're outside. especially if you're in a forest, now you can get ticks in other environments, but the black-legged tick or the deer tick is predominantly in forests. So if you've been in a forest or your shrubs, come inside. At the end of the day, put your clothing in the dryer. As far as tick checks, that's true. Some people live alone, can't see every part of their body, or you might have a guest get into these awkward situations. I think you just have to do your best, and of course, let the parents know, and to be aware. And I think the key, it's never perfect. Even when you do tick checks, you're gonna miss them, unfortunately. But you might miss them. Nothing's a guarantee. But to be vigilant. I think the biggest risk is when we let our guard down and we don't do anything. As just a brief anecdote, of course, I've had a lot of students work for me, and so has Dave, over the past few summers. And part of their job was to check themselves at the end of the day. They were required to do that as part of their duties. And as far as I understand, you know, no one had Lyme disease working for me, but there were a few cases where a student at the end of the season, when they stopped working for me, they got Lyme disease because they let their guard down. And so when we get into these, if you think you're in a site with not too many ticks or as the tick season dies down, don't let your guard down. And I think that's the key. Nothing's going to be perfect, but just to be as vigilant as possible.
We've also been getting some notes from listeners about pets. Jeff emailed in to say, I'm 54 and have lived in central Vermont my entire life. I've never seen a tick until 10 years ago, and now they're everywhere. My friend has two cats and lives in a neighborhood in Barrie Town. Her cats live inside and out, and when she lets them in twice a day, she checks them for ticks and always finds several on each cat's eyelid. The ticks she removes are tiny, barely visible, smaller than a poppy seed. Jeff wants to know what kinds of ticks these are and if they're harmful. But I'll pair Jeff with a note that we got from a veterinarian, Susan, who says, we all know ticks are a threat to our pets, too. It is important important to remember that our pets do not have to be deep in the woods to pick up ticks, and the ticks do not disappear in the winter. When your vet recommends that your pets be on year-round flea and tick preventative, listen and do it. Ticks cause a lot of disease and pain and some long-term problems in our pets. Use a reputable flea and tick preventative year-round. These are some of the easiest major diseases to prevent in our pets. So, David Allen, just before we leave the pet side of things, barely smaller than a poppy seed, kind of small tick on a cat, sound like a potentially harmful tick to you?
Yeah, so this is the earliest life stage of the black-legged tick. So the nymph is actually the second life stage. These ticks have three life stages, and they're born as a larva. And this is a very, very tiny tick, much smaller than a poppy seed, and very easy to miss. When we see them on the drag cloth, they sort of just look like little specks of dirt that are walking around. And then when that tick has a blood meal, it molts into the nymph, and then the nymph has a blood meal, it molts into an adult. The larval ticks luckily don't carry the bacteria that causes Lyme disease. That bacteria in the tick doesn't pass from mother to offspring, and so the larval ticks become infected during their first blood meal when they're feeding on an infected host. So these larval ticks are sort of gross, and it's horrible that they, you know, go on the ears and the eyes of animals. But you're safer there because they're not transmitting most of the tick-borne pathogens.
Before we get too far into our discussion of the blood-sucking arachnid that is the tick, we want to pay a special debt of gratitude to our marsupial friend, the opossum. This nocturnal being does us all a favor by hoovering freeloading ticks off its body at a prodigious rate. To learn how many ticks an opossum eats, we asked Bard College biology professor Felicia Kiesing that question when she was on Vermont Edition in 2017.
Well, we think that they can eat thousands of ticks in the matter of a few weeks, say. They're wandering through the forest. Lots and lots of ticks are getting on them, thousands, and only a very small proportion of those manage to actually feed successfully on the animals. The other interesting thing is that of the ticks that do manage to feed successfully on possums, almost none of them pick up the bacterium that causes Lyme disease. So, in fact, having ticks feed on opossums is really good for us because those ticks are really unlikely to become infected when they next take a meal, which could easily be on us or one of our pets. So if you think of it that way, possums are helping us twice over because they're killing a lot of ticks so that those ticks don't take another meal. But of the ones that do manage to feed on the opossums, those ones come off almost certainly harmless to us.
That, again, was Bard College biology professor Felicia Kiesing explaining how opossums eat a lot of ticks. We also got a note from Nancy in Townsend who says, I think if people want a way to cut down on the ticks in their yard and area, we should all invest in an opossum or two. Each opossum eats hundreds of ticks daily. Nancy suggests a movable large cage set around the property that will provide the critters with all the food and ticks they desire. She says, I think it's worth the effort. Also have heard good things about guinea fowl eating ticks, so lots of people trying to invest in ways to maybe clear their property of the potential, or at least lessen their potential for having ticks around them. Listeners, if you have questions about ticks, tick bite prevention, Lyme transmission, you can give us a call. Our number is 800-639-2211, or you can post your comments on the VPR Facebook page. We're talking today with Middlebury College biologist David Allen and University of Bridgeport biologist Bill Landisman, who recently moved from Green Mountain College when it closed, but is still sampling ticks in Vermont. As you can see, they're not medical doctors, so we're not talking really about Lyme or other disease treatment today, although that is, of course, a very important topic. But do send your questions about tick biology, et cetera, our way. Again, 1-800-639-2211. On this question, though, of Lyme and other disease transmission and treatment, Kathy in Royalton said, I'm finishing antibiotic for anaplasmosis. While we regularly check ourselves and each other for ticks and will continue to do so, the doctors, during my one-day Gifford Hospital stay due to my platelets having plummeted, absolved me of guilt. They said most people never find the tick or tick bite that is the source of their sickness. This was a surprise to me. Also, the good reminder I needed to hear again. Spray myself with DEET, take a shower within 2 hours of coming indoors, remove and wash the clothing that I was wearing. Virginia says, if I've been bitten by a tick and I don't see it until the next day and only then pick it off, should I presume that I'll get Lyme disease? The tick I discovered about 18 to 20 hours after I'd been outside in the yard was all bloated and jelly-like. This happened about 6 weeks ago, and there's no residual marking of any kind. I realized a few days later that maybe something was a tick, but I didn't seek any treatment. I keep checking the spot, but nothing has shown up. Virginia wants to know what our experts think. So we actually reached out to the health department because, as I said, we're not talking about disease treatment today. But we didn't want to leave you with no idea of what to do and what the protocol is. And we got a response from Natalie Quitt, the state public health veterinarian, who writes, "The health department can only provide general information about tick-borne diseases. Individual medical advice should be sought from a healthcare provider. The chances that you might get Lyme disease from a single tick bite depend on the type of tick, where you acquired it, and how long it was attached to you. Only black-legged ticks can transmit Lyme disease, and they need to be attached for at least 24 hours before they can transmit Lyme. This is why it's so important to remove them promptly and to check your body daily for ticks. Symptoms of Lyme disease appear 3 to 30 days after a tick bite. So if you develop illness within a few weeks of a tick bite, see your healthcare provider right away. Common symptoms of Lyme disease include a rash, fever, flu-like illness, and arthritis." Bill Landesman, it's not just Lyme, though, that ticks can carry, right? You're on the lookout, and everybody's on the lookout for other diseases as well.
That's right. Unfortunately, there are a few diseases they cause. As you mentioned earlier, anaplasmosis, which is rising quite rapidly in the past few years, still less common than Lyme disease, but it's here in southern Vermont and across the state. Babesiosis. So anaplasmosis is caused by a bacterium. Babesiosis is caused by a protozoan, which is a microbe that has a cell type that's actually more similar to humans. And it's quite rare, but also rising. And this is a disease that infects red blood cells. Powassan virus, also called the deer tick virus, that can, that could be the deer, excuse me, the deer tick or the woodchuck tick. It's very rare, but the symptoms can be quite dangerous, lethal even. There's Borrelia miyamotoi, which is causes a relapsing fever type. I'm not giving a good description here. There's no name for it. It makes you sick. It's also very rare. So there's unfortunately, but Lyme disease is by far the most common.
Let's go to Matt, who's calling in from Lancaster, New Hampshire. Matt, hi. You're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I'm surprised by how much I'm hearing that people actually get bit before they notice it. I've always immediately felt it. Usually I find it right above my sock line because that's when it transfers from my sock to the hair on my skin. And I'm wondering if it's because I have hairy legs that I feel it. It just feels like an ant crawling. I'm also kind of curious how much time you have typically to find it before it's going to bite.
Matt, thanks for the call. Interesting question. David Allen, do you know, I mean, this you both study ticks a lot. Do you have a sense of how long a tick might be crawling on someone before it bites? Is there a standard length that it sort of wanders around before it finds the spot it wants, or is it really variable?
I think it is quite variable. I know that, you know, I would guess that the average is about a day, 12 hours. They're looking for sites that they like, and you know, we've talked about them. They are looking for sort of like warm, dark, damp areas on your body. So they're going to crawl around for a while until they find that site. And I think it's going to be variable based on, you know, how desperate the tick is and how easy you are to traverse. But definitely, they could be on you for 24 hours before they embed. But there's going to be rare cases where they're going to come in a lot faster.
Bill Landesman, when we're talking about tick density and, you know, how many more ticks, I mean, clearly people are saying they're seeing more ticks, and you've been seeing more ticks over time, that even when it's a milder year than the previous year, it's still, you know, on the increase, and we're seeing more cases of Lyme disease as well and these other diseases that you talked about. Can you talk a little bit about the prevalence of mice and deer and why that's important? And then we can also talk about climate change.
Right. And it's helpful to think about the different time scales over which this problem has been increasing as well. We can think about the century scale, the past 200 to 300 years, the past 10 to 50 years here in Vermont and the northeastern U.S., and then, of course, this year versus last year. And at each of those time frames, the white-footed mouse and the white-tailed deer are important characters in this story. Those are two important food sources. So the white-footed mouse is a food source for the first and second stage, primarily the larvae and the nymphs. And so to understand the large number of nymphs we're seeing this year, we need to look back to the previous year and understand the densities of the white-footed mouse, which I don't measure. I assume because we're seeing a lot of nymphs this year that they were higher last year. Dave, you might be measuring that. And then deer, of course, are hosts for adult ticks. When adult ticks feed on deer, they use that blood to produce eggs. So if there are more deer, there are more chances for adult ticks to reproduce.
And David Allen, you have been looking at mice, right?
Yeah, just for the last 2 years, we've been trapping mice. You put out 100 traps, and then you're going to get – we do it during the night, so you're capturing these mice that are nocturnal and some other small mammals. And last year, we would set out 100 traps and get 20 or 30 mice. And so I think that's a relatively high density of mice last year that are supported – that fed a lot of larvae, and that's where we have a lot of nymphs now. Luckily, this year we're trapping and we're finding very, very few mice. So we'll set out 100 traps and find 5 or 3 mice. And so it could pretend that next year we're not going to find as many ticks. So hopefully.
Fingers crossed.
Fingers crossed.
And David Allen, Professor Allen, what about climate change and, you know, how that affects tick populations, but also because we've been talking about these hosts, it affects host populations, you know, obviously human activity on the landscape also affects it, but does climate change have an impact?
Yeah, and so, I mean, I think as Bill talked about, you know, there's different time scales, but I think that winter severity has a large effect on small mammal populations, and so a more severe winter is going to really knock back, especially the mice populations, the chipmunk populations. Severe winters don't affect the ticks as much. The tick is quite hardy to cold temperatures and finds a nice spot underneath the snow, rides out the winter quite well. What I think may affect the ticks is the sort of length and warmth of the spring and the summer. So the temperature, the tick development rate is tied to temperature. And so the way I think climate change is more directly affecting the tick is if you have a warm enough summer for the tick to complete its development during one summer, that's going to allow the population to grow a lot faster.
One area that we've been getting a lot of questions about but haven't tackled yet, so we'll sort of tackle it all in one bunch, is what about tick prevention? So we've talked on this show before about wearing long clothing, tuck your pants into your socks so it doesn't give the ticks an area to sort of climb up inside your pants. A lot of people, though, want to know about what potential spray. Alex wants to know about any anti-tick sprays that are effective and natural and don't contain DEET. Debbie in Bethel recommends permethrin on outdoor clothing. It repels, even kills ticks for 6 weeks through 6 washings. Debbie says it works. Permethrin is something that you can actually put on your clothing. You don't put it directly on your skin, but you can coat your clothing or buy coated clothing. And Carl in Jericho also recommends that. Says in the numerous discussions about ticks in recent years, I've heard little or no emphasis on the efficacy of permethrin-treated clothing in repelling ticks and other insect vectors of disease, including mosquitoes. Permethrin is easy to apply, effective for 40 days and through multiple washings, entails minimal exposure to the wearer, and can be applied to sets of clothing intended for, say, gardening or hiking. What are your experts' thoughts about this approach? And finally, I'll also add a thought from Carrie, who's calling in from Virgins, but we don't have enough time to take, who has little kids and wants to know about what bug spray is safe and effective for her children to use. So, Professor Landesman, Professor Allen, let me start with you, Bill. What do you think about permethrin and other ways to try to have some kind of chemical way to prevent ticks?
Well, I think it was described quite well. From what I understand, they are effective. I don't tend to use them myself because just because of how I do the research. But I do get asked this question quite often about what repellents to use. And my recommendation would be to try whatever you like and see how it works. But I would just urge everyone to combine that with tick checks. My biggest concern is that if someone feels that they're using a product that is very effective, in fact, and maybe from their own experiences, they see that it works. Yes, and it's going to definitely reduce your risk. But nothing's 100% effective, and it also there's the chance that the product is not used correctly. So I would just urge everyone to try something out and but combine that with vigilant tick checks.
Well, or as somebody mentioned, Bill, you know, if your pet is carrying a tick in and you've worn your spray out in the woods, but you don't realize that there's a tick, you know, nearby on your pet, and you get it that way. That's another way. David Allen, right. What do you think?
Yeah, you know, we use permethrin. I've got four hardworking students who are out in the woods, and we wear permethrin coveralls, and I find it quite effective. I think it's really important to target your pants and your shoes and your socks. That's where most ticks are going to be attached to you, and then they'll crawl and find other places. But if you only want to minimize the amount of spray or chemical, focus on your socks, your shoes, and the bottom half of your pants.
Yeah, and for Carrie, who was calling in about children and what's effective and useful, in the research that I've been doing, it looks like the EPA does recommend oil of lemon eucalyptus for children over the age of 3. It hasn't tested it on young children, so that is not recommended, but hasn't been tested. And DEET is recommended for children 2 months of age and older. And at least according to the federal government, is safe for pregnant women to use. So lots of research on that available if you're looking for treatment protocol and what kinds of chemicals may or may not be effective. We'll continue to talk about ticks. We will look into talking about Lyme disease treatment and other medical treatments for diseases that ticks carry. We know that's something that's important to talk about as well, not for this show, but for the future. In the meantime, Bill Landesman, biology professor at the University of Bridgeport in Connecticut, and David Allen, biology professor at Middlebury College. I know we didn't get into the specifics of your research, but I really appreciate both of you talking ticks with us today.
Thanks so much, Jane.
Thank you, Jane.